If you want to turn to Mark chapter 14, this will be at where we'll get our text this morning. Mark chapter 14, beginning in verse 3. And being in Bethany at the house of Simon the leper, as he sat at the table, a woman came having an alabaster flask of very costly oil of spikenard. Then she broke the flask and poured it on his head. But there were some who were indignant among themselves and said, "Why was this fragrant oil wasted? For it might have been sold for more than 300 denarii and given to the poor." And they criticized her sharply. But Jesus said, "Let her alone. Why do you trouble her? She has done a good work for me. For you have the poor with you always, and whenever you wish, you may do them good. But me you do not have always. She has done what she could. She has come beforehand to anoint my body for burial. Assuredly, I say to you, wherever this gospel is preached, in the whole world, what this woman has done will also be told as a memorial to her." Before you jump to any conclusions, the lesson that Steve gave 2 weeks ago is not this lesson. Sounds very familiar, an anointing of Jesus with a flask of expensive perfume, but two totally different situations and storylines that we see here. And I want to thank Steve for doing all the visual aids last week, because we've got another situation where Jesus is with a group of people around a meal table, and reclining is the word that is used there. And so Steve did a great job showing us the type of seating arrangement that was used in those days, the custom that they followed. And so if you were here 2 weeks ago, you got all the visual aids. I don't need to cover that again. But this is an intriguing little story. If you begin at the beginning of the chapter, you would think that this is in line with what the chapter begins with, but it really isn't. After 2 days, it was the Passover feast of the unleavened bread, and the chief priests and the scribes sought how they might take him by trickery and put him to death, but they said not during the feast, lest there be an uproar of the people. Now, if you just read that, you would think this, as we follow on, it's only 2 days away from the Passover. And the old rule is, when you study the scriptures, you need to study everything that's involved in a particular situation. So we need to go to other gospels to get the complete picture. John gives more details. Matthew gives other details. But if you just take this account alone in Mark, you might wonder what's going on. John says that this event in Bethany is 6 days before the Passover. So 4 days before the beginning of this chapter, Mark decides to put this little story in there. And, you know, we might wonder why. Why would Mark stick this story in in the middle of another story? Well, there's a lot of conjecture. And one possibility is that Mark wanted to show the contrast between the attitude and the lack of love of the religious leaders and some of the disciples to that of Mary, who was so loving and devoted to Jesus that nothing stood in the way of her devotion. You start the chapter and the religious leaders are trying to trap Jesus in some way and take him and put him to death. And in John's account, it says that they were even trying to get Lazarus, whom Jesus had raised from the dead, and they wanted to put him to death as well. Well, if you get rid of the evidence, there's no case. Of course, that didn't work. But we want to focus on this little story. Bethany is about 3.5 kilometres outside of Jerusalem, and if you're coming from the north, coming from Galilee through Jericho, this is the last point where you can get accommodation under their rules for when they're coming to the Passover. Bethany was a familiar place for Jesus. We've learned in other times in the scriptures about Jesus coming to Bethany and events that have occurred there. And so this is the end of Jesus' Galilean ministry. He's now coming to Jerusalem so that everything can be fulfilled. The Passover is at hand. But more importantly, this is when Jesus is going to become our Passover sacrifice. And he's outlined this to his disciples on many occasions, how that he's going to be taken, he's going to die, he's going to be crucified, but he'll rise again from the dead. Galilee is, if you were driving, it's like going from here up past Nambour, just past Nambour. That's about the distance if you were driving on a road. But remember, they didn't have vehicles. They had foot, or if they were lucky, they might have had a donkey, or I guess somebody might have had a horse or a mule. I'm not sure if they even rode the camels, those sort of people. Maybe they did, because that's camel territory. So Jesus has come 125 kilometres from where the centre of his ministry took place in Galilee. And now it's all coming to a climax. And this story is set in the house of one Simon the leper. Possibly somebody that had leprosy and was healed by Jesus. There's a bit of conjecture about that. Some say it might be that they got the name mixed up and he wasn't really a leper at all. There was a little bit of misinterpretation of the Aramaic scripture wording. I'm not too worried about that. I think he was a leper, but I think he was a healed leper, because if he was a leper, he would have been the outcast. He wouldn't have been in a house giving a meal to a special guest and a group of people that were friends of the special guest. So I suggest that Simon was probably a healed leper and probably wanted to say thank you for what had happened. And of course, going over to John's gospel, we find out that Lazarus was there. And we know a bit about Lazarus. He's been raised from the dead. He was the brother of Mary and Martha, and Jesus had spent some time with these three people because they were his close friends. And of course, Mary and Martha were there. And what an opportunity to say thank you, because their brother had been brought back to life. And the other disciples were there. We don't know if they were all there. We don't know how many disciples outside of the 12 were there even, but there were disciples at this meeting. And interest in Jesus and Lazarus was growing. People were coming to see Jesus, but John says, but they also wanted to come and see this guy that had been raised from the dead. I mean, I think that's something pretty spectacular, and if I thought it was a genuine situation, I'd want to have a bit of a peekaboo at this Lazarus guy. So let's look at the dinner party. As they were in Bethany in the house of this Simon the leper, they sat at the table. I want you to use a bit of imagination. I'll give you some license to imagine what might have been going on. These group of guys are lounged around, going to have a meal. John says that Martha was doing the serving. And you know what guys are like when they get together? You get together with Johan, you hear all the stories that's going on, everything from here to whoop whoop. He knows about it all. And so he'd be telling you all of these stories. But let's focus on these guys. Simon the leper. He might have been telling the other guys, you know, guys, look at me. Look at me. I come to meet up with this guy, Jesus, and look at me now. I've been healed. I'm whole. I'm not an outcast anymore. I think he's marvellous. I think he's a prophet. Somebody special from God. And here's Matthew sitting over here, and you know, Matthew's thinking to himself, well, you know, I've run into this Jesus fella too. And so he starts to tell them his story. You know, I was a tax collector. Uh-oh. What happens when you hear about the taxation department? You know, the ears go up. I used to work for Rome and I used to tax the Jews. But you know what? I ran into this Jesus. And he actually asked me to follow the way that he was going. And I saw that being a tax collector, that occupation was not consistent with walking with Jesus. And guess what? I'm now writing a book about all the things that this Jesus has done. He's the Christ. I believe he's the Messiah. And I'm putting down everything on record that I've learned, that I know about Jesus. And then there's Peter. And Peter says, well, I used to be a stinky old fisherman. And ask Ellie what she thinks about the smell of fishy clothes and that when I come home. She doesn't like it. And Peter says, I used to be that smelly old fisherman. I had a pretty good business, but I also got to communicate with Jesus and he changed my life. I know that he's the Christ, the Son of the living God. It's been revealed to me. And you know what else? He's promised me the keys to the kingdom of heaven. I love him. And then there's Lazarus. Well, hang on, guys. I think I can beat you all. You know what? I was dead for 4 days. Buried away in a tomb, wrapped in grave clothes, starting to, you know. And the voice of Jesus called out to me and I stood up and I came out. And here I am alive and well. Look at me. Tell me this is not the work of God. Martha, doing what Martha does, going around doing the catering, the serving, the cooking, and we've run into Martha before because she complained to Jesus on another occasion that Mary wasn't helping her when she was doing all the stuff in the kitchen. And even back there, Jesus said, leave her alone. She's chosen the good thing. And Mary's in the story again. Mark doesn't say that it's Mary, but John does say that Mary comes onto the scene. Now, women in those days were supposed to be in the background, maybe seen some of the time but not heard. And maybe Mary was in the background thinking, these folks are all bragging. What can I do to show my love for Jesus? Whether she had it with her or whether she went to her home, she gets this flask of very, very expensive, precious ointment or perfume. Very expensive because it came from the north of India and it had to be treated and it had to be transported down to there. Part of the country, and you know, there's a lot of questions. Well, where did Mary get a flask of perfume, about a pint, which is about 350 grams in our calculation? Where would she have got that? some people say, well, she was rich, you know, and it was just, she went and picked it off the shelf and brought it and gave it to Jesus. Others say, maybe it was her dowry. And she was waiting for the day when she was going to get married, and that would be handed over to the other family. We don't know. What we do know, that Mary very boldly comes in and she breaks this ointment, this perfume flask. Apparently they were sealed, and so they're only for extremely special occasions that you use this perfume. And she breaks it and she pours it over the head of Jesus, and it goes over him. What would your reaction have been? Because it's been calculated that it was a year's wages worth for the average worker. How would you have reacted if you saw this person do what Mary did? Well, here's the disciples of Jesus, the followers, the people that Jesus is putting his trust in, and straight away they said, you're crazy. What do you think you're doing? What a waste. And John says the ringleader of the dissenters was Judas, who would betray Jesus. And Judas says, that's an extreme waste. You should have spent that, and you should have given the money so that we could give it to the poor and help the poor people. And there's nothing wrong with that. In fact, that's something that we're encouraged to do as Christians, is to help the poor, help the needy, help those in distress. They said it was wasteful, but Jesus said, what an investment. She's done something special for me. You see, the other guys might have been focusing on what they had achieved by coming to know Jesus, but Mary focused on what she could give to Jesus. And you know, worship is not about getting. It's about giving. And Mary gave what she could at that time to Jesus. And she was commended by Jesus for what she did. And John goes a little bit further to explain something about Judas. We might say, well, you know, Judas had his head screwed on, and he saw reality. He saw that this was an extreme amount of money. And think of what it could have done for the poor and the needy. But Jesus said, John said, Judas had an ulterior motive. Judas was the treasurer for the disciples. He carried the bag of money. And John said, he used to pilfer, he used to steal from, he used to take for his own benefit the money that was in the bag for the disciples to use in Jesus' ministry and to take care of their needs. And so when Judas saw Mary break that vial, you know what he saw? Dollar signs. Now, they weren't dollars then, but in our day, it would have been dollar signs. Because he was probably most likely thinking, wow, if I could only get my hands on that money. I would leave a bit for the others, but for me. And Jesus said, leave her alone. She has done a good deed to me. A beautiful thing. There were two Greek words that Jesus could have used on this occasion. Agathos means good. And so giving a donation for a particular cause is agathos. That's good. To be encouraged. But Jesus used another word. He said, what she did was kalos. Not only good, but lovely. It came from the heart. It was a beautiful thing that Mary did. Now, I don't know, there's nothing said whether Mary fully understood everything about Jesus and what was about to happen as he was going to the Passover and then he would be betrayed and taken and crucified right there and then. But Mary was the one that sat at the feet of Jesus listening, learning, trying to understand Jesus and his teaching. And Jesus said that was the good thing that she chose. And it might be that she understood more than even the disciples of what Jesus was about to do. There's not a record of Mary saying a word. She gets down, kneels down before Jesus after she's poured the perfume all over him, and then with her hair she wipes the perfume off her feet. What Mary did was worshipped Jesus. She bowed down before Jesus. She surrendered to Jesus. But she became the lowest of servants for Jesus. She wasn't about bragging, look what I've done. She doesn't say a word. But she honours her Lord with the perfume. Mary's gift and actions speak volumes. A little jar of perfume speaks about her love for the Master. He was a friend, a teacher, a mentor. He'd raised her brother from the dead and returned him to the family circle. Jesus was her Lord. He was the author of her salvation, the hope of her soul. And there was nothing too expensive for her to give to her Lord. She did what she could. It speaks about a generous heart, expressing love and gratitude. I don't believe that Mary sat and calculated on a calculator, wow, I'm giving away $45,000 today, but I'll do it to, you know, shut these guys up because they're bragging about what they've accomplished through their relationship with Jesus. I don't believe that Mary thought for a second about the cost. Love doesn't value or determine how much. Love just gives. And Mary just gave without looking for anything in return. She gave what she could. You know, you can give without loving. But you can't love. Without giving. Her gift showed a willingness to give the best that she had. And Jesus recognized that. It demonstrated humility and courage. All of these guys sitting around. Martha's doing her thing, serving, and maybe whether she noticed Mary, what she did or not, I don't know. But Mary was courageous and humble. She totally surrendered to the Master. Nothing stood in the way. And she was courageous to make the sacrifice because of the stinging criticism that came from the disciples, of all people, the religious people who said they would follow Jesus regardless. Mary followed her convictions and not the crowd. And how often we are pushed into submission to what other people think rather than saying, I don't care what other people think, this is what I believe God wants me to do, and I'm going to do it anyway. Mary didn't care about the critics. She possibly knew about Judas and his desire for the dollars, but it didn't bother her. She knew about the custom of the day where women should have been in the background and not out there where the men were. She didn't care about any of that. She did what she wanted to do to honour Jesus. Mary's gift also speaks about motives. Mary's gift was Judas's downfall. Everything that he saw was in dollars, in money, what he could get out of money, what money could do for him. And we know that right to his end. Money was his motivation even to the time that he would hand his master over for 30 pieces of silver. The deed which showed the motive of Mary's heart exposed the vice of Judas's heart. Care for the poor was his cover. Covetousness was his real motive. Mary's gift acknowledged. She has done what she could. She has come beforehand to anoint my body for burial. Assuredly, I say to you, wherever this gospel is preached in the whole world, what this woman has done will also be told as a memorial of her. Isn't it interesting that of all the people that might have been there and the spectacular things that they may have done or achieved through their relationship with Jesus, it was Mary. And this little incident that Jesus highlighted and said, this will be remembered for the rest of time. Everywhere the gospel is going to be preached, this story about Mary's total devotion to Jesus will be right out there. Nothing done for the Lord is waste. What Judas saw as waste, Jesus saw as giving her best. She saw the opportunity and she ran with it. How often do we talk about what we want to do? When I've achieved this, when I've got the right job or, my education or, when I've paid off all my debts and all, I'm going to be more committed to the Lord. Maybe that's what that vial of perfume was all about. Mary was saving up this money for retirement. Who knows? But on the moment when the occasion was there, she grabbed it. You have to take the moment with two hands and use it. Don't wait for the right time. It'll never happen. You know, somebody has said that the pathway to hell is paved with good intentions. We're all going to do this, that or the other. And sometimes that something is staring us in the face. Somebody needs a visit. Somebody needs a helping hand. Somebody needs a little bit of financial assistance. Or somebody just needs an ear to listen. Do it while you can. Because once that opportunity is gone, it's gone forever. And this is what Jesus taught in Matthew 25, the judgment scene. And people were coming and Jesus was saying, you go here to the right and you go to the left. Well done, blessed, you who looked after me when I was hungry and thirsty and naked and in peril and whatever, all those other things that he said. And people were saying, well, when did we see you? And he said, when you did it to the least of these my brethren, you did it unto me. But the other people were the people that were waiting for the golden opportunity, waiting for that big thing that they could do, taking care of all the other things in life, and then they were going to do the thing. And Jesus said, depart from me. You didn't do what I called you to do. Oh, we're going all right. Great things are usually small things. The big things can become a problem. You know, we can squander all of our opportunities and at the end of the time think, wow, I've been all right. I've come to church every Sunday. And Jesus can say, sorry. I called you for a lot of other things, but you didn't listen. The prodigal son is the embodiment of waste. He wasted his possessions, his life, his time, his soul. But you know, the one thing that he squandered the most was the opportunity to do what he could for his father. The waste for Mary would have been not to have seized the opportunity. But in the eyes of Judas and some of the other disciples, it was just a dollar waste. Don't count anything for God, time, money, energy, whatever it is. If we're truly committed to God, it's never waste. That's what he's called us for. To do good works that he's made for us to do. Ephesians. Small things become great when dedicated to God. You know, it's small things that you remember quite often more than the big things. We just had all the tragedies down with the fires down from, well, they started up north here and they've gone all the way down the coast, all the way into Victoria. And we've seen some horrific sights. And a lot of those are hard to forget. One stands out to me. People standing on the edge of the lake, of the water, waiting to be rescued. The firemen, the officials, everybody is doing their thing, and a bunch of little kids. They got some shells and some rocks. And they wrote on it, thank you. Thank you. Thank you for saving us. They did what they could. Who would have ever thought that a little bottle of perfume could tell such a story? It wasn't the perfume, it was the love behind the perfume. Who would have ever thought that a little boy with a picnic lunch of some sardines and a couple of bread rolls would have made history? And we still talk about him. Who would have thought a little shepherd boy with a slingshot and that one stone would have catapulted that little boy into the throne of God's kingdom? Little things done for God are the biggest things, and they will be remembered. The power of influence is greater than we may realise. The fragrance of Mary's perfume still lingers on. What will you be remembered for? What do you want to be remembered for? Maybe a better question, what's in your alabaster box? What is it that's so precious to you that maybe it's holding you back, but maybe you're willing to give that to Jesus? Opportunities missed are opportunities lost.